In society, we've always looked up to leaders to help guide us in our paths of life. When the term leader is used, most people think of business owners, politicians, athletes, or entertainers. But I think some of our most important leaders are educators. Whether you were homeschooled or attend school, you had to learn about the world through the guidance of an adult. Someone who's dedicated their lives to give you the tools to be successful. In my case, the person that's responsible for my knowledge and technical success today, I met in college. And since I went to a small school, I had 14 classes with her over the course of 4 years. I think that's right. I genuinely don't think I'd be where I am today without her guidance, support, and dedication to her craft. She's even inspired me to become an educator myself, as I'm currently teaching the same subject she taught me back when I was in school. Our guest today is an educator who is fearless, breaks stigmas in her field, and is a shining example of why educators deserve our respect and gratitude.
This episode of Stay Risky was recorded and brought to you by Engine Room Recording Company.
I came around here looking for a way and found myself outside with everybody else.
All right, now we are joined with Carrie. I hope I didn't make you cry or tear up.
I did a little bit.
A little bit. I guess what I said was, it's funny, Darren, one of our other guests, said that my monologue wasn't true. I said we taught the same exact thing, which isn't entirely true, but they have similar principles to them. Because, I mean, you do have to program certain things in video editing, and also it's all made for web and consumption anyway. But thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
You made it in. But if for anybody that doesn't know you, tell the crowd, the whole world, the millions of people that are listening.
I love that we have a crowd.
We do. why don't you just kind of talk about your background, you know, what you teach and what you, you know, what you're passionate about and stuff like that.
Okay. So how far back from my background? Let's see. I actually went to college, high school. Well, I graduated high school.
Perfect.
Went to college for actually video production.
Oh, cool.
And then I was in the industry for probably 15 years.
Okay.
And then got a job at the Art Institute teaching usability. So I taught there for about 2 years, then went to Butler. And I actually taught an audio video course. So,
yeah, nice.
And then Capstones too.
Yep.
There was video students in there. So, but mainly taught web development courses and developed a web development program there. Taught there for about 11 years. And then now I'm teaching at IU Indianapolis, I guess it's called now,
sure.
IUPUI. Mm-hmm. And I'm helping to further develop their web development curriculum.
Very cool.
Cool. Yeah, our class.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It was interactive. Well, I mean, it changed like 18 times the name of it. But, and all the interactive media students, we all had the same. I counted, I think it's like 14 or 12. It was whatever every semester. And we even had a couple classes, like the JavaScript classes and all that. But mm-hmm. It was a lot. I had her. It was guaranteed I had Carrie every semester.
Yes, love it. Pretty much. Yeah, I was the only web teacher. So if that was your program, I hope you liked me, you know, because you're going to see a lot of
Well,
me.
If I didn't, you wouldn't be here. So,
actually, this just got weird.
Yeah, yeah, I did. Yeah. But no, and then we also had that Germany trip that we can get into a little bit later. But yeah.
So are you the only developer's not the right word? Are you the only one doing the curriculum currently at the IU campus?
No, actually, okay. There's two of us, which is really nice because before we've both been teaching for about 10 to 12 years, and we've always been by ourselves. So it's really nice now that there's two of us to like really build this like fully fleshed out curriculum to where we want our students to, you know, be the most sought after in the industry by companies around here and be like, oh, those students from IUPUI and web, you know, they're fantastic. I got to have them. So now we can do that.
Did you know the person you're working with, or was there like this kind of like fear of trying to collaborate with somebody for the first time? Like, did you walk into it being like, oh my God, I don't know how this is going to work?
No, this is where it gets awkward. He's actually my ex-fiance.
Nice.
Let's open that can of worms.
Yeah. So, yes, I knew him.
On this episode of Love Line. Yeah.
So how is that, though, like, is surprisingly, or did you know going into, like, we'll be okay? Like,
I knew we would work well together.
Okay,
so,
good.
Yeah. So I knew – that's one good thing about it is that, you know, you always wonder, like, what's the dynamic going to be with, like, the people you work with?
Sure.
Sure.
And luckily, because we worked together for a really long time, and so I knew – almost a lot of the, well, most people that work there already, and I knew him. So it was very comfortable to go in there and feel like, you know, I already knew kind of the lay of the land and mm-hmm. stuff like that. I knew the people. So it's been really good.
That's awesome. Awesome. And at the end of the day, you can separate personal and work. Cause I mean, that's, I mean, granted your personal life does tend to go into your work too, but you know, as long as you have that good balance, I mean, it's, you guys are adults.
Mine doesn't.
Yeah.
But no, that's awesome. Yeah. At Butler, it was just super fun. And I didn't necessarily, I mean, we have web design as a service, but to the traditional, like how you taught me to hand code and stuff, like I don't necessarily do that. And we talked about this last time that Ben and I spoke at your class before you left, that it still got me into the field of interactive media, like, you know, web app design, even just like, then it ties into social media and video. And it's such a broad spectrum now of things that go into it because, you know, 15, 20 years ago, a social media manager was not a title or a thing. And now every year we've got, you know, everybody's a social media manager. Yep. Everybody's a content creator. Everybody's this, specialist. This, and that.
Everyone's a specialist.
So it's like, but all these skills are like digital. We were talking about trade schools before this started rolling. It's like a digital contractor is kind of what you're teaching the kids and prepping them to be. Cause you can, as long as you know how to code and you know how to problem solve from coding, you can figure out almost anything.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. Mm-hmm.
Do you, with trying to create a curriculum that is helping students be the best they can be, and also, you know, I think you said the best in the nation, like sought after, do you find that the upkeep of having to stay with a changing industry constantly, is that a struggle, or do you find like you like that challenge and that's kind of, you know, why you want to create the curriculum that you do? Like, is it constantly feeding your need to create?
It's definitely a challenge.
Okay.
And because if you think about it, like when I first started teaching, they taught Flash. By the time I taught for 2 years, Flash wasn't even around anymore. So it's like, and the hot languages keep getting developed and keep getting, you know, you prefer React, and then next year it's Angular, and it just changes all the time. So it's difficult to develop a curriculum that will be current in the 4 years, even just the 4 years that they're going through the through school. But it's nice though, because it forces us to pay attention to industry trends, keep in touch with industry leaders out there, go to conferences, figure out what's going on, and make sure that our curriculum is flexible enough to where we can pivot really fast if we need to.
Okay.
So yeah, it's definitely challenging though.
But you love that, right?
I do. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's like, man, I wish I just taught like World War Math. II or something. Yeah, like something it's not going to change, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, but this forces me to learn new things and to stay current. And I like that. I like how exciting it is. And then sometimes students will bring stuff to me that I don't even know about yet. And so it's just really nice to be in an environment that isn't so stagnant, but you know, at times it can be overwhelming. You just kind of have to make
It's as soon as you learn the thing, you then have to start learning the next thing. But the nice thing is you have security in it, because it's like it's going to adapt. Like, you know, if you were like, I am only going to teach Dell Service 2003 coding through Linux with a Raspberry, like it just, I mean, you can always do something different.
Yeah.
And something I want to ask you, I don't know if I ever asked you, did you ever, because you teach coding and all that, did you ever like take on side pro, like have you ever like made a website for a company like under your own name, or is it just kind of like education's always been your path?
I did for a while. I did freelance for a while, and I'm sure you all have done freelance before. It's you
we
know,
still do. We do all the time.
Yeah, technically. Yeah.
So you know how it is. You make a contract, and then they want more and more and more, but don't want to pay for it. And I just did not. I am not a person who likes confrontation, so that wasn't. I was just like one and done on that kind of thing.
Sure.
I was like, ah, freelance is not for
me. Had to, because it's a reality of freelancing, but I think one of the best things we've learned in business is to just be super upfront with the customer and have a meeting beforehand saying, what are your expectations? Here are ours, and these are the boundaries. And I want to make sure you understand that before we move forward, because, you know, for graphic design, he's like, two edits, you get two.
Not to sound like, evil, but I love confrontation. Not, like, not that because I want to make someone feel uncomfortable. I am very much like, this is what I provide. This is what how it's going to go. If it doesn't go this way, this is what to expect. Because if that's not set ahead of time, then you get in that where like, and that's, I think a lot of people in terms of like trying to do their own business or trying to do their own thing, that's probably the number one thing that kills it. It's like, you love this thing and you want to do it and have fun with it, but then you have that awkward part of, now I got to deal with this person, and now I got to try to like ask, and it's always weird to ask for more money or ask for more time, because like you don't want to look like you don't know what you're doing, or you don't want to make it weird, and then they come back at you and like maybe they rear their ugly head and they start to become this person that you then don't want to work with, and now you feel stuck. So but no, I mean, at least you recognize it, but then with education you're helping influence someone along their path, and a lot of times like you can also help them realize that maybe it's not for them. Like, that's a big thing, is like when I minored in information technology, I instantly was like, nope, not me. I want to do the art side of design. And like, because like the coding stuff, like I can do it and I still remember it, but I personally would rather make the layout of the website how it looks versus how it's coded. And that's just me. But like, I learned that through your class, because you taught us everything.
Yeah.
So
do you have that situation with students where you're like, hey, you know, do you have to have that tough talk? Or do you find that you students who realize that, they typically like, hey, this just isn't for me? Like, are you ever in that position where you have to be like, are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I talk to students and I tell them, you know, and it's just like, you know, you tell your kids, like, you know, failures are just as important as your successes. Like, you can learn a lot from that. So if you come to my class and you figure out that you just absolutely hate it, well, good for you, because now you've learned where you don't want to go.
Sure.
And it gets that path that you want to go a little bit more narrow, right? Yeah. So, so if students come to my class and they just figure out it's not for them, like, no hard feelings. I get it, because we've all probably been there, done something, and be like, I don't want to do that. So I do have to have some talks with students a lot of times, but most of the time they like figure this stuff out on their own.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Especially if they're tech oriented, they can pivot and they know what they want to go to.
And you don't want to waste each other's time. That's one of the biggest, especially nowadays, time is so precious. And it's just like, listen, it's not you. This just may not be your thing.
So every guest we have, for anybody that doesn't know, we send out a questionnaire just to kind of have back. I mean, I know you like the back of my hand, but Ben doesn't.
It's creepy.
One of the things you said was, is girls in tech, because that's a point that you brought up, that you know, some students in the past might have said, oh, girls shouldn't be in tech because it's a male dominated world. So you are clearly a girl in tech and you teach it. So what has your experience been, you know, when you first started educating? You might have been an outlier, but now you're seeing like there's this really big movement for women to do everything and anything that they want to do, because that's how they're, people are people. They should do what they want to do. So what's been your experience with all that?
Yeah, so I'll never forget, you know, it's one of those kind of like core memory moments in your life where like, you know, I was in college and I was talking to this guy and he was a computer science major and I was like, oh, that sounds like fun. I thought about taking a course and he looked at me like I had a third eye and was like, there's no girls in computer science. And I just thought, oh my gosh, maybe I can't do it. And so I didn't take that class. And looking back, you know, now as I've seen my career progress, I'm like, dang it. Like, I don't want that to happen to anybody else. And so I'm a really big advocate to any kind of non-stereotypical person in any field to be like, don't let somebody tell you you can't do it. You can do whatever you want, no matter who you are.
I don't understand that mentality. Like, I just struggle with it. And I get it. I was maybe raised in a way that, you know, my mom taught me you don't do that.
Like, but traditional like, roles.
I just
like
don't
that.
Get the, like, looking at you with a third eye. Be like, all right, cool. Like, I would be like, man, there's no girls in tech. Do
that's
it.
That's actually badass.
Like, I'd be super into it. Like, that's super cool. But I don't understand that closed door restricted mentality. I also struggle with most stereotypes in life, but that's just
I mean, it's unfortunate. And even like today in the industry, like if I tell somebody what I do and what I teach, you can see like
in their
the
eyes,
surprise on their face, like, oh, like you're in that kind of field. And I'm like, yeah, why are you surprised? So, and I think it's helped develop this kind of, I mean, as much as I hate that that happened, anytime somebody tells me like I can't do something or like you won't fit there in this, I'm like, hold my beer.
Because
I'm going to show you.
I'm the same
can.
Cloth. So. Like, yeah, anytime it's like, no, nah, that's not going to work, or you suck at this. Okay, hold on.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a good quality to have, to be like, I'm going to show you wrong, you know?
It is. I think it's a double-edged sword. Maybe you can attest to this too, Brian, but like, I think it is. I love Drive. I'm constantly reading about like what drives us and how we can have routines and routines that benefit us. But I also think it's a double-edged sword, because we can be so driven that all we have is tunnel vision because something upset us and we're like, well, this is what we're going to do. And then it's like 2 weeks later and you're like, what have I done with my time? You know, what am I actually being productive in? So yeah, I think it can go both ways, but I've always been like that. I've always been like, mm-hmm. okay, all right, well, just, you know, hang out and we'll see what happens. As I've gotten older though, I've been better at being like, I don't have to prove anyone anything. And I can take that feedback and I can prove that I can do it, but I can do it over time. It doesn't have to be tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be this year. I just have to figure out a way to make that work for me. And it's a weird switch, mm-hmm. you know, it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll take a quick break right here, but I want to jump into Germany and well, at least what that experience was to me and maybe hear your experience on it too, because you've done it a few times.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we'll be right back.
This episode's Trailblazer shout out goes to Girls Who Code. Girls Who Code is an international nonprofit organization that aims to support and increase the number of women in computer science. In 1995, 37% of computer scientists were women. Today, it's only 24%, and that percentage will continue to decline if nothing is done to fix it. Girls Who Code recognize that the biggest drop-off is from girls aged 13 to 17, which is why it's critical to get young girls involved early. They've reached girls around the world and are on track to close the gender gap in new entry-level tech jobs by 2030. They include programs like their summer immersion program, a specialized campus program, after-school clubs, college loops, and a series of books, all aimed at empowering young women to pursue a career in coding. If you'd like to learn more about what this great organization does, head to girlswhocode.com to learn more.
All right, we're back from our break. So we ended off with, I talked about Germany. So when I was in school, I think it was the summer going into my sophomore year. At Butler, we did two and a half weeks?
Mm-hmm. I think it's like 2 weeks, yeah. Yeah,
two or three weeks. We went to Germany. And I was there with you in Cutler. And the reason why I wanted to bring it up, because Ben and I were talking about it earlier, is that week I told my family before I left, I am not using my phone at all. And I turned it off, and we had like the little we had the local German phones in case we need to call each other.
What they called them?
Yeah. So,
okay.
But it was a really eye-opening experience for me because one, it was extremely difficult to go 2 weeks without using my phone at all. Like I turned it off entirely. I had it with me for pictures. Mm-hmm. Like I turned it on for pictures, but I had it in airplane mode. I wanted to see if I could do it, and it was really tough, but I did it. And then when we were at the dinner table and all that, I saw everyone on their phones. And I'm like, man, because we were in like the Moroccan restaurant in the German, mm-hmm. In Germany. I was like, this food's so good. And this place is so cool. And everyone's just, mm-hmm. And I was like, man. Now granted, we had like fun experiences. Like we went to Amsterdam, we went to Berlin and Bonn and Cologne. And we got to see all the sights and all that. But it was just so eye-opening to see. Granted, it's a good tool and it's like what we need to use for our businesses or just personal lives and stuff like that. But it was just so interesting to see, you know, I'm pursuing a field in tech and I almost felt like kind of icky seeing everybody like so consumed in it.
Yeah.
So, and granted, I don't know if you noticed that when you were there, but I overall just wanted to know like what your experience has been because you've been there a few times now. Has it always been Germany or have you guys gone to other places too?
It's always been Germany. Mm-hmm.
That same curriculum, that same school that mm-hmm. we went to.
Yeah.
So tell a little bit about like that program and what we all did when we were there.
Okay. So the program we're at, let's see, Bonn, which is like a small college town. So if you're, I think it's kind of like Bloomington, Indiana.
It was Beethoven's hometown.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's a small college town, very cool place. And we're there probably the majority of the time, probably seven to 10 days. And then we go to Berlin. And then you had that free weekend where you could travel wherever you wanted to. So some students travel together. I think you went to Amsterdam.
With a group.
Right, yeah. Some people went to Paris, and I've been to Bruges, and we went to Oslo and Switzerland some other times. So, yeah, it's really awesome. And I think it's what was interesting for me, because it's not just like it wasn't web. It was just like a media trip. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about it is how they have used their past to make their future better and to show like how the media is different, how government's different because of what happened in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the really interesting part. And I hope the students got that part and weren't so consumed by their media.
Well, me being raised Jewish, I 100%, like when we did the whole, like, you know, the Holocaust camps and all that, like I 1,000%, you know, Germany has been in the back of my brain because even in Hebrew school, like they showed us like actual footage from the Germans of the, really? like really graphic when we were like 10, which is probably why I'm the way I am today. But no, but no, like I actually remember, I don't even think it was one of the kids in our group, but we were at the, we were at one of the camps and we were going through and someone was laughing and I looked at him like, I'm about to knock your head off of your shoulders if you don't stop laughing. But that whole trip though, like everything, and I could even see it in the people, like granted they like Americans, but some people, like when you're on the buses and all that, like they can tell you're American and they don't want to associate with you just because it's a very different culture. It's very more like prim and proper. You know, there's a lot of pride. There's also, you know, you've got this looming past on your head. So, but everybody there was nice and it's a beautiful country and, there's so much history. It's everything. So the food's great. And then you've got all the different, like the Cologne, cathedral is amazing.
Yes.
But no, I definitely picked up on that, but I would say that I'm not sure. I think a lot of people, at least from my experience, it was a vacation fun hangout, but I definitely noticed that but also I was raised knowing that like history in the back of my head. So,
yeah. And I think, you know, it has a lot to do with like the age of the students you take. And like, even from the difference between like the group that went with you to the group that we went with last year, you know, just the, you know, what the pandemic did to them or the just how they grew up, but the just kind of self-absorption instead of like really looking at what they're surrounded by in the history and where it came from and just being more like, I'm going to take a selfie on every single monument when it's like, this is a monument to commemorate all the Jews who have died. And this isn't a selfie park.
Right. You know this what is I something mean? For you to look at and take in and reflect. And
right.
Yeah, no. And I think even if it didn't, you know, even if that wasn't the goal to have like the historical part of it, it's just, you're in a different country. Like it's everything's different. The money's different. The food's, I mean, granted you can get food in both places, but like, a lot of things are entirely different. So like it's put your head up so you can see what's going on around you. Like in Amsterdam, I mean, it's so confusing to go down the streets and like, but you ride bikes everywhere and like you had to know where you were going. Mm-hmm. So like, and then we stayed in a hostel and like there was five of us that went, it was a 6-person hostel. We had this older gentleman who just loves traveling. Like we didn't get like, I was like, oh my God, we're gonna get some weirdo. And he was so nice. We all stayed in the room. We had all of our stuff in there. He was very respectful. He was cool. He was probably in his 50s or 60s and you know, we're all 20 or whatever.
Yeah.
It was such a really cool, like awesome experience overall. And if someone can like afford to do it when they're in school or whatever, they definitely should because it's so eye-opening. It's such a fun experience. Mm-hmm. Have you done international travel?
Yes, but not with school.
What'd you do?
I went to Ireland
a
couple times. Yeah. You mentioned this earlier, but I think it was funny because they'd be like, oh, you're American. We always felt like there was like an eye roll.
Right.
They're like, oh, another fucking tourist. But it was like, yes, I'm American. I'm sorry. Yeah. I was like, my lineage though is from Northern Ireland, but that didn't really matter to them either. Yeah. But yeah, I went up to Belfast a couple times and got to see kind of old world Ireland areas and some of the Americanized kind of things. Like Dublin to me is very McDonald's, Starbucks, you know, whatever. But it's neat, like driving through the old countryside and stuff like that was really cool.
Speaking of which, the McDonald's in Germany was awesome. Because we'd be out late and then we're like, oh, what are we going to eat? And we're like, well, McDonald's.
Did they have the kiosks when you went? Like,
no, you had to talk to a person.
He actually had to, yeah.
And the other thing too is that people will notice when they go overseas is almost every other country speaks English and their main language. So like when you go there, you're like, man, I don't know any languages. And we had like German language class, but I mean like half the kids were like jet lagged or like didn't sleep the night before. So like people were like, it was super fun. We had I forgot her name, but we had a student with us who she spoke German. So she was like our translator. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you remember that was?
I get all the trips mixed up. I think she was, a CSD student? And
yeah.
I think her name started with a B, like Brianna or Bruce something.
But she was German, though, I think is what it was. She either was German or she just loved the German language. I couldn't remember
something
what
like
it was.
That, but yeah.
But no, she helped us with a lot of, and like, I think, like, because in Germany, like, all the words get smashed together. So I'll always remember our bus station was Ollenhauer Straßen.
Yeah.
And I had to learn what the Strasse was and all that, so it was just super cool. But gearing back to the United States, we're coming back.
Across the pond.
So you're working at this new school. So you went from a private school to a public school. So kind of tell us about that transition.
You know, I was wondering what the difference in students would be.
Sure.
And there is a big difference in students. But mainly it's like Butler students were just so quiet, you know, they were just a lot more reserved. Whereas at IU Indianapolis, they like talk to me and like have students like sit in my hour or my office for like an hour.
Oh my God, go to class.
Yeah, they would just hang out with me and they would like ask me personal questions and I would get to know them. And like, as much as I would love to have that happen at Butler, just didn't. Students didn't, I don't think, talk to their professors as much, at least for me.
Were they more attentive though?
Because
like different types of learning, like when I was at IU, those of us who were more auditory and wanted to converse and stuff, I definitely didn't learn as much as I could if I just shut up during the class and listened and took notes. So I'm wondering if they're more attentive at Butler, you know, they're, because they are taking notes and they are paying attention, opposed to current experience where they're like, let's socialize a little bit, we'll get it. But
do you think it's a small class size thing? Is your class sizes still small?
Actually, they're kind of small. I only had like my biggest one is like 20 some. Okay. Next semester it'll be more like 40.
Okay.
So but that's still not too bad.
But they're probably used to overall though, like being in actual lecture halls, like for their first courses.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, I think my biggest class at Butler was like a, I actually took a, it was like a feminism or like female rights oriented class. And that was probably the biggest one that I had. And I was one of four guys in the class. But I just thought, I thought it was interesting. It was like, it was a, and the lady who taught it was super welcoming to me. And they talked about all types of issues. But I just thought it was cool just to be a part of something that I probably would have never like outwardly chose myself. But I had to do that hour. And I was like, well, might as well learn, you know, because I don't think about those things because I'm not a woman, so you know. And it was a super cool class, and it was fun. It was a good time, and we had some guys in there that were definitely like overstepping their boundaries. Like there were some awkward conversations that would happen, but no, it was just super cool and it was fun. And I met a lot of friends there too. Like a lot of the girls that were in the class, we became good friends, and we would hang out, you know, outside of class too. And it was just cool. It helped me like open my mind, and I think Butler did a really good job with the I forgot what the term was, but they made you do like 8 core hours of a certain like learning about things, like look at a watch a symphony or go to those
the cultural credits really cool.
They require, it's funny because all the seniors would do them like all in the last week. And they'd go like, you know, 8-hour days, like they'd go to like a lecture, then they go to a symphony right after it, and you could just tell they're like just trying to get it in. But but no, Butler really helped me. Well, I went there for football. I realized that I didn't really want to do football, but it did help me realize everything else that I want to do. I always wanted to do tech. So I liked having the small class size. I think personally for me, it was the best way to learn like computer science. Cause I mean, we worked in little groups. Like we're like, hey, you know, how would you do this and that? And, cause like for me, if it was like a 50, 60, 70 person, and it was just like, here's a subject, you figure it out. You know, I think for me, my learning would have been tough, but yeah, I don't know. But I guess, is there any challenges you're facing? You talked about kids with COVID. Now that we've gone past that, because I was the pre-COVID, you know, the world was fine. Nothing, you know, kids would show up to class sick. Nobody would care. But now, like, now you're in the space. What's education like since COVID's happened?
You know, it's difficult because you don't know how COVID affected the students. And like beforehand, when we would have students who needed extra help in some way, we would get some letter from Student Disability Services and saying they need these accommodations, right? Well, now you have students who might have had some, you know, had traumatic experiences with COVID, maybe like they lost a family member or something like that, and but they don't have SDS type accommodations. So they come in and they're having a bad mental health day, or they can't come to class, or something is triggering, but we don't have any accommodations, you know, but we want to give them some accommodation, but we want to be fair to other students. So it's kind of like this, how do we navigate this space of, you know, realizing that they experience something that we need to accommodate them for while being fair to all the other students. And it's That's just tough. It's very difficult. And, you know, I tend to err on the side of like, I will be as helpful as possible. I'm going to hope that you're telling me the truth and like this really did happen and you're not just wanting to skip class kind of thing. But, you know, but then there are some people who
try to take
the abuse the system. And the hard part is you can't like ask or like you can't prod to find out if it's true or not, because then even if it's not true, then you're stressing them out, and then you're just, you could be, they could be lying about it, and then you're stressing them out, and then they end up becoming distraught over it, over something that they were lying about in the first, you know what I mean? So like,
this is why I couldn't be a college professor, because I would be horrible at that piece. I'd be like, listen, Jeremy, get your butt in the class.
Well, and I think college is such a pivotal, I mean, you know, any age group is pivotal. Like when you're a middle schooler, you've got you're figuring out your, you know, hormones and all that. You go to high school, you start dating. College, you're on your own. I mean, the Butler kids weren't, I don't think they're on their own, but most people, most kids are figuring out things of them. And now have you seen, have you taught anything besides college?
No. Well, actually I taught middle school for like a year to help out.
Then you realize that was not for you.
Holy cow.
That's a lot.
That is a different beast. And like hats off to those educators.
Absolutely.
Holy moly. Yes.
That's a lot.
It is.
Do you, being with the school setting, outside of that school setting, you obviously have your personal life and hopefully some other, like, you know, separation. But do you find that work comes home with you and that that is a positive thing because it is something that allows you to continue to move forward in an ever-changing industry? Or do you find that you're able to actually separate work from home and you have hobbies and a whole other thing that you do and that actually helps you do better at your job?
Yeah. I actually, I bring work home and it's because like a lot, because of the curriculum that we're developing, I'm having to like learn some more advanced programming language I haven't before. So my personal time is taken up by learning this stuff, but I love it, you know, and it makes me understand things. I mean, I've been teaching this for a long time, but I'm still learning new stuff and be like, oh, that's why this is how it is. Right.
Connecting the dots.
And so, and if I see like I had this whole class built out this semester and had everything done up to the, like the last week. And then as I'm teaching, I'm like, you know, I don't like that assignment anymore. Yeah. So I come home and I change it and I do all this stuff because I want to try to make what we do in class, not just these one-off, like this was just to learn something and I can't use it again, but more like, okay, I created like these five projects in class. I can actually add to my portfolio while I was learning how to do this kind of thing. And so, I mean, luckily I love what I do and I love teaching and I love coding. And so it's not so much work. But yeah, I tend to bring it home probably more than I should, but I love it.
Well, it's great that you're willing to pivot opposed to some educators that it's just very much like cookie cutter by the book every semester.
They made their curriculum. They don't want to do it again. Yeah. They've already made it. They've already put in the time. They just want to coast on
it. And it's a good reason why you're on the podcast is because you have a little, it's that passion, that drive, that trailblazer mentality, which is what me and Bram seek out and the people we want to surround ourselves with because we're very similar. We lifelong learning. It's, it's in my opinion, it's a key to success, whether it's personal or professional.
So. Yeah.
Here's a nerdy tech question for you.
Okay.
We are moving very much into a mobile world. Do you ever see web either not being as important or going away entirely in terms of like the layout of a computer? Because I mean, people use computers, but like you can do almost everything on an iPad or a phone unless you need computing power. Like my mom doesn't need a laptop. She wants a laptop because she likes computers. She doesn't need a laptop. And most people don't necessarily need a full computing device. So do you see mobile becoming so intuitive that you can do absolutely everything on your phone or in your pocket?
That's a good question. I don't think it'll ever go away. I think you'll need your computer. I think you'll need all that stuff. I don't think like your phone can do everything. But luckily for web, like all your apps are created with web languages, you know, they're all like these JavaScript frameworks pretty much, you know,
and they're responsive.
Yes.
That's the big thing.
So if mobile takes over, still got a job, you know what I mean? So it's like this, and even cause like we were worried in the tech field, like AI, like what is this going to do? Cause you can go to ChatGPT and be like, anything. Hey, create a web page for me and it will create it for you. Right. But we can, I mean, I don't know if you've ever used code that way. I've been playing with it and it doesn't always work. There's problems with it.
Oh yeah.
If you want to like revise something that you've already built, it can't do that. So, and then there's people who need to monitor that and who need to write AI code. So it's like this industry will never go away. These skills will never go away. And even I think at the very least, coding teaches you critical thinking skills.
It does.
How to problem solve. And those are, I mean, name an industry that doesn't use that. You can't. So even if you don't code, like you don't code now, but you learn those skills.
I use the skills to problem solve how I'm going to put my shoes on and walk out the door.
Exactly.
Because I balance about 18,000 things on my head all at the same time. But my brain works that I actually do better when I have everything in my brain all at the same time. I just go, I want to do this thing for 2 hours, do this thing for an hour, put this back, grab this thing, which for him, I know is a nightmare. But I do it. I do it just because that's how I've always done it, and that's how my brain works. But I've also had issues where I take on too much, and then I'm like, ah, crap. What do I do? But no, I think it's it's things are going to change the way they change. It's a matter of if you're like ready to change with it as it's changing. Because AI, even though right now it's clunky, it's going to be creepy better.
Yeah.
Probably not too long. It'll probably make its own program for itself to make itself better before a person could ever do that.
It terrifies me on some degree, but then I have to think, okay, like I got to take this thing that terrifies me and figure out how I can use it for good.
Sure.
You know, how I can teach the students like, hey, I know you're using it, but let's like use it in a better way. Or, you know, here are the problems with that. How can we fix it?
Well, it's like,
thing.
It's like everybody has a knife in their house. Doesn't mean they're going to stab someone with it.
Exactly.
I've noticed my getting older. My breaking point has been VR. I want nothing. Like, I just don't like, it's fine. It's cool. Like, I just don't want to work in VR and I work in IT. I don't want to use VR. Like I want nothing to do with it. Cause it's just, to me, it's just one step closer to being not a part of our actual present world. That it doesn't scare me. I just don't want anything to do with it. And
plus the motion sickness, it is horrible. Have you ever done a VR video game?
I've done for a little bit, but nothing long enough, like maybe 5-10 minutes, and that was
it. Oh, I thought I was gonna throw up.
Really?
Yeah, it's because you're seeing everything move around you and your feet aren't moving. Yeah. And it's super, I mean, it might be also too, because like I do music, my hearing's probably not the best as it's been. So like I always, like even right now, I keep popping my ears because my ears feel like they're clogged. But I like when I put it on and I played this game, after like 5 minutes, I was like, I have to take a break. I feel like I'm gonna throw up. But granted, that could just be me. I know a lot of people that will do it for hours and have no problem with it. But yeah, I'm also in the same boat of like, I used to play video games a lot. I feel like I don't even really have the time to dedicate to learn the game anymore. Like I'll pick up Halo and I'll be like, oh man, this 12-year-old girl is kicking my butt right now. I'll just stop playing.
Yeah.
But the generational gaps there are very interesting to me, like what my parents went through with cell phones. Like they got it, but they still kind of use them at their basic level, you know, or my grandmother is online, but we have to constantly help her not get phished or like reset her password, things like that.
Yeah.
I think this is my turning point, is VR is probably going to be my cutoff. And it's interesting how what we associate with and what we're like, yeah, okay, I'm still interested in this, but that's too much.
Yeah.
Or that's not something crossing I'm passionate about. Yeah.
Well, people always just give me a hard time because like I have social media accounts, I don't use them. They're like, I reach out to you through Twitter or whatever, and I'm like,
I'll get to it in like 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you know, you're part of media, why are you on it? And I'm like, well, I mean, I have those accounts because I should, but it's like, that's just not where I want to live my world.
Well,
like I want to live
like,
it with the people here, not with like these celebrities.
You're a chef. Why don't you cook your own food? Like, cause that's my job.
Yeah.
Maybe you just want to not do your job when you go home.
Yeah.
No, I'm the same way too. Like we run a media company. We have to use the pages because that's part of our brand. But I also don't like, I turn all my notifications off.
Yeah.
I don't go on there unless I have to put something out. Yeah. We do have like, you know, interaction periods. We'll go on for like 30 minutes or an hour, like comment, you know, do the thing that you need to do. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm not scrolling, or like same thing with like metal music. I used to listen to metal music all the time. Started doing a metal band. I don't listen to metal music unless I'm writing it. Even when I'm writing, I don't listen to it. I listen to it when I'm at the gym or I'm actively recording it. Mm-hmm. Those are the only times I do it, just because I think it gets to a point where it's like seasoning. If you just season something and season, it stops tasting good anymore because you just put too much into it.
Right.
So you can definitely get burnt out easy. But but thank you so much for coming down and talking with us.
Yeah, thank you.
This has been fun.
Well, good.
Yeah, we talked about all, we went.
Yeah.
We literally went around the world.
We did.
But so usually at this point we close off and have people talk about their links. I mean, you're an educator. So I guess more of maybe a good way to close this off is like, you know, what are some cool new classes that are coming out? Maybe not even just at your school, but like things you're seeing come out in college that now kids can pursue, or even in high school. Like, is there new classes and new things that kids can do if they're interested in tech or in web design or anything like that?
I think there is a big push now for kind of data science and artificial intelligence and how to use that effectively. I think that's really awesome. I definitely think, you know, our world is filled with data, you know, no matter what you do. And so I think that is a great space for anybody who's in the tech industry to go into, and just maybe like, not even if that's not the field you want to go into, but learn how data is used and how you can control your own data.
Yeah.
Because that's like AI, that's kind of a scary thing for a lot of people. Yeah. And so
just, they don't understand it.
Yeah. So if you educate yourself and understand things a little bit better, but I think that's, those are two really interesting ways that our industry is going right now.
That's very cool. That's a great call outs.
Cool. Well, thank you for spending time with us.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out.
Thanks for having me.
Engine Room Recording Company, located in Broderpool Village just north of downtown Indianapolis, specializes in making your projects go. Podcasters, bands, audiobookers, rappers, singers, songwriters, and everyone in between, the Engine Room Recording Company has the experience, the engineers, the equipment, and the environment to fuel your projects. For more information on their services, creatives they've worked beside, and gear they use, visit them today at engineroomrecordingcompany.com and be sure to follow them on Instagram at engineroomrecordingco.